Boy, you sound like you're on something. Hey. Hello? Where'd he go? It don't take that long.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Relax.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, we get all shook up and everything.
Well, I got to unmute the microphone and turn on the headset speakers and all kinds of stuff, right?
I don't dare call before 7 o'clock because I know what'll happen. Mark doesn't warn me. He said, boy, you don't want to call before 7.
Why? Actually, I was...
We don't want to get fussed at. You better turn around the other way so everybody can... We don't want to get fussed at.
I'm going to fuss at you. I may not be here. I mean, I go up to go to the bathroom and say goodnight to my mother and my grandmother before I come down for this. And I was just sitting here talking on TeamSpeak.
Well, we got a full crew here tonight, Bill. We got 9 people all sitting in here, if you count Don.
Good.
We got Randy and Jonathan and... Janet and Fulton and the Edomite and Donnie and Mark and me, of course. And JJ's around somewhere.
You don't mean to call him the Edomite, you know? He really ain't, you know?
Yeah,
I spend most of my life taking up for Brown. You know that?
Do
have a tough one.
It just comes.
Won't be around Celine, boy.
It just comes. Don Brown's one of the guys. It's okay if you mash him, but you don't want anybody else.
You know, that's everybody seems to think that it's okay, and they always try to get me to talk about it. Wait a minute, you know?
Yeah, but it's so easy.
Yeah, but it just depends who you are. Well, I want to listen to you talk about it or not, you know. I sure don't want to listen to one of them Baptists up there talking about how he's misguided in his Bible, you know.
Well, this is your break over here.
You got to protect him over here.
Okay.
Well, you know, we all, we joke and kid about him, but we love him, you know, in a funny sort of way. Oh, okay. But, does anybody have anything they want to say or add anything before we get started? I know Donnie's real anxious to get involved in all these names. Well, we finished the hard ones out, most of the hard ones last time.
Randy knocked them out last week.
Where are we?
Randy says chapter 6, and I think I agree with him.
I think we got through 5. And
Yeah.
What do you remember, Jerry?
Well, that's what I remember, is best I remember, you know, at my age. Now, I don't have anything. I've been wrestling with the cat, and unfortunately, being old, it happens to old people, you know.
Hey, I saw that.
I know. Well, I ain't gonna do that. But anyway. Well, nobody has anything, any comments or any. Bill, you before I turn it over to you, okay. Well, nobody has anything you want to say.
No.
Hey, Jonathan, you got anything you want to say?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Janet, really? You want to make any
announcement?
No. We sure had a good meal tonight. Sad you ain't here, but we'll make up for it when you get down here, Bill.
Yeah. Well, I've missed 154 meals, so you owe me. 3 years of Bible studies.
Here we go. Bill has to do band working.
I want all 154 meals in a week, right? No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry, Mark. What was that?
How's the new van working out for you?
Great. It's not exactly economical on gasoline, but it's running great. So that's good.
Good.
I'll be taking it to... Philadelphia on well to the Philadelphia area, right? I'll be taking Southern Pennsylvania on Saturday.
Okay.
I'm going down to see Bob in PA on Saturday, and I'll stop and see Matt and Cheryl on the way home on Monday night.
Any more museum stuff?
Nah, I don't think we'll have the time to do too much. Just Saturday night and Sunday, and I'll be leaving Monday morning, so. To go see Matt and Cheryl. It's a weekend out, right? Basically, that's all it's going to be. I don't think we'll have a whole lot of time to do too much.
Well, how are Matt and Cheryl doing? I haven't talked with either one of them in a while.
Well, they're doing all right. Cheryl's probably going to be listening in the Bible study tonight. I mean, she's on the chat server, so.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, you got any opening comments or anything you want to do?
No, I really don't. No, I really don't have anything prepared. I feel like a bum now, right? Let's get on with the genealogy of the sons of Levi, right?
I'm sure you'll think of something, though, before we get too involved. But don't hesitate now to jump in anytime.
Yeah, well, when I have something to offer, it comes, you know. That's I really didn't. I've been so busy all week. I wrote three articles for the Saxon Messenger in 4 days, right? One of them's kind of short, but two of them are kind of long. And I wrote an article on South Africa. I wrote an editorial on reaping what we sow. And that's the it's a stab at British Israel and the English destruction of Germany. Yeah, you know, and today England's being overrun by aliens. Well, guess what? If Hitler had won, Europe would still be for Europeans, right? That's the way I look at it. And the English and American peoples have reaped what our grandparents sowed by signing on to these wars against brother, and now look, where did it get us? We're being overrun by squat monsters and Negroes. That's our reward for doing the deeds of Satan, right? So that's the gist of my editorial this month. And I did an editorial on South Africa also, and the gist of that is that if the white man doesn't learn to stand up for himself and defend his white race, that we're going to have South Africa's all over the place real soon. You know, I mean, it's coming.
Yep. Well, answer something for me before we get into chapter 6. I was talking to a fella that's from Serbia, and he's very critical of the Germans because of the way he thinks they handle Serbia, and he doesn't really like the Germans. What's your take on that?
The German-Serb relations in World War II?
Yeah, well, actually, he goes back to World War One, and he seems to think that that maybe the Germans didn't like the way Serbia treated them during World War One, and they retaliated in World War Two, and there's a lot of ill feeling there.
Well, there have always been, you know, friction between Germans and Slavs. It's always been that way. I mean, the Slavs crossed over from Asia behind the Scythians, the Sakins, who became known as Germans, and have been pressuring the Germans for 2,000 years, right? Basically, there's always been friction there. There's always going to be friction there. Until Yahshua returns, there's going to be friction there. I'm not saying that the Slavs are polluted by any means. Most of the Eastern European Slavs are, I believe, Adamic, except for the ones that are obviously mixed with the Jews. And then you have the Tatars, who were half Slavic and half Mongol, and, you know, the ones with Turkic blood in the south. But most of the Slavs, I believe, are Adamic. However, that friction between the Saxons and the Slavic people have always been there. I mean, historically, this struggle is 1,500 years old, at least.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's you go back in history, and you can't go back far enough, right? You could go back to World War One, and then you could go back even further than that, and further than that, and further than that, and pointing at different events, where does it end, right?
Well, I was talking to a young fella today from over there, Kobe, and he was very critical, wanted to know why I was, pro-German, taking up for the Germans, and so I asked him why he was, you know, why he felt that way, and he just told me, you know, that they have bad blood.
Well, you know, you could go back to the Austrians, you know, and the Habsburg dynasty. But before that, you had the Lithuanians and the Poles, who were pressuring the Germans, right, unfairly, and wanted to rule over Germany. Before that, you had the Wends attacking Saxony and trying to invade Saxony, and the Wends are Slavic, and Otto I repulsed them to Brandenburg. But they settled in Brandenburg. They've been there ever since, and they're identified as Germans today, but they're really Slavs. But there's always been contention between the Slavs and the Saxons. It's not anything new, and it's not going to end. Yeah, you know, but the Slavic hands are far from clean in the matter, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how much history he actually knows. I haven't gotten into it with him. You know, I don't want to lose his friendship over it. He's a nice young man, and, you know, he knows the Jewish involvement, and, you know, he's pro-white and everything, and so I don't know that he's identity. I don't think he is.
Probably
you
not, because I don't believe a bunch of people.
Oh.
I'm making mad.
Yeah. I don't think he is. But, you know, he's pro-white and everything, and just a nice young man, and I want to, you know, keep our friendship going. Okay, that answers that.
He's going to have to learn not to despise the Germans, right?
Yeah.
If he's going to be a nationalist, he's going to have to learn not to despise Germans.
Right.
Yeah, you know, he should be despising non-whites and what the Jews are doing to Western culture.
But he does, but he says there's not much Jewish influence in Serbia. Do you believe that?
Well, you know, the Serbs hung tough against the Turks for a long time. I don't really know the history of Serbia that well after the 1400s and during the Polish period, right? Well, when Jews dominated Poland and Poland began to dominate Eastern Europe.
He looked at his, what he believes, is probably Odinism.
I don't know. I haven't
got Orthodox.
I really don't know what the Serbian history was under Polish domination of Eastern Europe. I really don't. But the Poles dominated Eastern Europe for a time. It was called the Lithuania. It was really Lithuania, right?
Yeah.
But okay. Poland was in league with Lithuania, and they dominated Eastern Europe. Against the and fought against the Teutonic Knights for a long time, and I'm not really that familiar with that history because I'm not a student of the medieval period, right?
Okay.
You
guys gonna be fine when they know where you are.
What we got to do now? We got the hard part now. We got to figure out which one of these four gentlemen wants to start off this reading. So we'll take volunteers. If not, we'll get JJ to choose.
Holding my throat, suddenly.
Gerald, who hasn't read in a while?
John hasn't read in 3 years. Come on.
Have anything to do with frogs?
I'll read the name.
I had it. Remember now, we got to talk loud enough for Bill to hear, and also for the people on TeamSpeak to hear.
You want me to talk loud, or you want me to read the name?
Well,
all right, chapter 6. The sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, and the sons of Kohath, Amram, Izhar, and Hebron, and Uzziah, and the children of Amram, Aaron, and Moses, and Miriam, the sons of Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar.
So what we see here is really, like I said last week, right, there's really only three generations between Levi and Moses. Now, Moses was 40 years old when he smote the Egyptian and fled for 40 years. So he was 80 years old when he led the children of Israel out in the Exodus. And he was 120 when he died about 40 years later. So here we have three generations between Levi and Moses, and perhaps three more between Moses and the Exodus, right? 75, 80 years. So that's just something to think about. It's really only six generations from Levi to the Exodus, basically. And yet, you know, that 400 years isn't the time they spent in Egypt. That 430 years is from the call of Abraham to the giving of the law at Sinai. So that includes all the time of the lives of Isaac and Jacob in Palestine, right? That's all. That's important to grasp, because most Christians are under the false assumption that the children of Israel were in Egypt for 400 years in slavery. They were probably only in slavery for two or three generations. Maybe four generations, tops. That's all.
Verse 4. Eleazar begat Phinehas, and Phinehas begat Abishua, and Abishua begat Bukai, and Bukai begat Uzai, and Uzai begat Zerahiah, and Zerahiah begat Marioth, and Marioth begat Amariah, and Amariah begat Ahitub, and Ahitub begat Zadok, and Zadok begat Ahimaaz. I'm starting to confuse all the words in between the names now. I got a note on mine, Bill, that says that Zadok was a high priest during David and Solomon.
Yes.
Zadok, is that a play on Melchizedek?
Well, it means Melchizedek means king of righteousness, right? Because Melchi means king and Zadok means righteous. And this word Zadok is the same word, and it means righteous. He was the high priest during the time of David and Saul. But his name does mean righteous. That I know it's Melchizedek, Z-E-D-E-K, when it's spelled in that name. But that's Hebrew didn't have any vowels, and the damned Jews stick whatever vowels they feel like in at any given time. I mean, the vowels are all up for grabs when you're trying to transliterate Hebrew into English.
All right, verse 9. And Ahimaaz begat Azariah, and Azariah begat Johanan. Johanan begat Azariah. He it is that executed the priest's office in the temple that Solomon built in Jerusalem. And Azariah begat Amariah, and Amariah begat Ahitub. I already read those, huh?
No, you didn't. It's just that some of the names repeat in different generations. Yeah, you know, we have we do it in our own race where we name our sons after their after our fathers. Yeah, you know, I know that a lot of people in Germany do that. They name they share the same names every two generations because they're always naming their son after their father.
But don't we do a junior and a third down? We do here in the South.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a junior, and my son, I changed his middle name. He's William Kenneth. But the names John and William are through my family for 10, 12 generations, right? My grandfather's name was John William, and his grandfather's name was William Henry. So William Henry, two generations later, you have John William. John William named his sons John and William. My father's name was William. So it's those names have been in my family. I mean, if you looked at my family tree, you'd see John, William, John, William, John, right down the line, right? You'd see a couple of different names, but there's a preponderance of John, William, and Andrew, and Andreas in my family tree, right? It was Andreas in Germany. So that's common for one family to keep certain names, and we see that here where several of these names are repeated for several generations. That's we've always done that. Even when John the Baptist, right, when Zechariah was told to name his son John, Zechariah was like, "What are you nuts? We don't have anybody named John in our family." You know, and he named his son John because the angel commanded it. But that was, you know, his kinsmen When Zechariah said that his name has to be John because that's what the angel wanted, his family said, no, that we don't have anybody with that name in our family. Yet, you know, people have always kept certain names in their families. It's traditional, right? It's always been traditional with this. Look at Don and Donnie.
I was adopted.
Fish.
Where I mean, cattle feet?
That's what I mean. Salt in an open wound, that's all.
That's right.
Well, my son carries my grandfather's name, so that's four generations, but it's exactly the same, you know. And we've had the first name continues for about eight generations.
Yeah, right. That's been a tradition. But in a lot of European households, the names, we've broken from that in America. And I'm not saying they do it in all of European households, but I have commonly seen it with not only Italians, but also Germans and some Scandinavian families where they actually do, well, like, say you'll have a Sean and a Thomas, and then Thomas will name his kids, his oldest boy, Sean, because his father's name was Sean, and then Sean grows up, names his oldest son Thomas because his father's name was Thomas. I mean, so those two names will keep flipping through the generations, right? I've seen a lot of that.
Well, I guess I messed up. I should have named J.J. Jocko, shouldn't I?
Yeah, y'all noticed how that the blacks, at least in the South, are trying to abandon Christian heritage names and go to oddball, just made-up junk?
Well, they look a lot better with oddball, made-up junk. I was reading the front page of the newspaper, the local paper here today, and I forget the last name already, but this 24-year-old Negro got locked up in town for dealing drugs, possession of cocaine, and his first name was Marvelous.
Marvelous. Precious and marvelous, and but you know, when I was a young boy, they had a lot of Abrahams and Moses and Josephs and all look in the black. And now they're Shanikas and, like you say, marvelous and precious, and you know they're
Jamal. Well, one of my favorite stories was this, and this is a true story, right? This was in the Wall Street Journal, that there was a woman from Detroit named Genoria. That's how she said her name, Genoria. And the story was that in Detroit in the 60s and 70s, the white doctors and nurses used to have fun with the Negro women having babies and suggest these crazy names for them and convince the Negro women that the names sound real good. And when this woman spelled her name was really Gonorrhea.
The French women was named Female. F-E-M-A-L-E.
and they go for that. Genoria. Oh, yeah, Genoria. How do you spell that? G-O-N-O-R-E-A-H. And they go for it because they're stupid. It's funny.
Somebody was telling me about one of them called Shadiet or Shadiet?
Shathid.
Really
spelled
Shathid. That's from Montgomery. I think it reflects, though, something on a basic level. These people realizing there's nothing in the Christian heritage form. You know, they may not know that on a conscious level, but I think somewhere down the side, you know, that's why Islam is so appealing to young black men, you know. It's got more, you know, more for them.
Well, that's where they should be.
Yeah.
Caught up in Judaism for Gentiles. That's what I think about Islam, right? It's basically a Jew-invented religion so that they could control the heathens. That's the way I look at it.
All right.
Make sure the sand niggers have clean feet when they come into the Jewish shops.
Verse 12.
And Ahitub begat Zadok, and Zadok begat Shalom, and Shalom begat Hilkiah, and Hilkiah begat Azariah, and Azariah begat Sariah, and Sariah begat Jehozadak, and Jehozadak went into captivity. When the Lord carried away Judah and Jerusalem by the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Sons of Levi, Gershom, Kohath, and Merari, and these be the names of the sons of Gershom, Libni, and Shimei. And the sons of Kohath were Amram, Izhar, and Hebron, and Uzziel. Sons of Merari, Ali, and Mushi. And these are the families of the Levites according to their fathers. Of Gershom, Libni, his son, Jahath, his son, Zimah, his son, Joah, his son, Adu, his son, Zerah, his son, Jeteri, his son, the sons of Kohath, Benadab, his son, Korah, his son, Esur, his son, and his son getting to me, Elkanah, his son, Ebiasaph, his son, and Aser, his son, Tahath, his son, Uriel, his son, Uzziah, his son, Shaul, his son, and the sons of Elkanah, Amasai, and Ahimoth. As for Elkanah, the sons of Elkanah, Zophar, his son, and Nahath, his son, Eliab, his son, Elraham, his son, and Elkanah, his son, and the sons of Samuel, the firstborn, Vashni, and Abihah, the sons of Merari, Mali, Libni, his son, Shimei, his son, and Uzzah, his son.
Now, this is the same Samuel as the book, right?
Shemaiah, his son, and Haggai, his son, Azariah, his son. And these are they whom David set over the service of song in the house of the Lord. After that, the ark had rest. And they ministered before the dwelling place of the tabernacle of the congregation with singing, until Solomon had built the house of the Lord in Jerusalem. And then they waited on their office according to their order. And these are they that waited with their children. Of the sons of the Kohathites, Heman, a singer, the son of Joel, the son of Shemuel, son of Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Eliel, son of Toah, the son of Zuth, the son of Elkanah, the son of Mahath, son of Amasai, the son of Elkanah, the son of Joel, the son of Azariah, the son of Zephaniah, the son of Tahath, the son of Aser, the son of Abiasaph, the son of Korah, son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, his brother Asaph, who stood on his right hand, even Asaph, the son of Barakiah, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Michael, the son of Besaiah, the son of Malchiah, the son of Ethni, the son of Zerah, the son of Adiah, son of Ethan, the son of Zima, the son of Shimei, the son of Jahath, the son of Gershom, the son of Levi.
So it's basically reciting backwards the same genealogies it recited forwards, right?
And their brethren, the sons of Merari, stood on the left hand. Ethan, the son of Kisha, the son of Abdi, the son of Maluk, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Amaziah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Amzi, the son of Bani, the son of Shammer, the son of Mali, the son of Mushi, the son of Merari, the son of Levi. Their brethren also, the Levites, were appointed unto all manner of service of the tabernacle of the house of God. But Aaron and his sons offered upon the altar of the burnt offering and on the altar of incense, and were appointed for all the work of the place most holy, make an atonement for Israel according to all that Moses, the servant of God, had commanded. And these are the sons of Aaron: Eleazar his son, Phinehas his son, Abishua his son, Muki his son, Uzi his son, Zerahiah his son, Merioth his son, Amariah his son, Ahitub his son, Zadok his son, Ahimaaz his son. Now these are their dwelling places throughout their castles and their coasts. Of the sons of Aaron, of the families of the Kohathites, for theirs was the lot. And they gave them Hebron in the land of Judah, and the suburbs thereof round about it. But the fields of the city and the villages thereof they gave to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. And to the sons of Aaron they gave the cities of Judah, namely Hebron, the city of refuge, and Libna with her suburbs, and Jeter, and Eshtemoah with her suburbs, and Helon with her suburbs, Deborah with her suburbs, and Ashan with her suburbs, and Beth Shemesh with her suburbs, and out of the tribe of Benjamin, Geba with her suburbs, and Elameth with her suburbs, and Anathoth with her suburbs. All their cities throughout their families were 13 cities. And unto the sons of Kohath, which were left of the families of that tribe, were cities given out of the half-tribe, namely out of the half-tribe of Manasseh, by lot, 10 cities. And to the sons of Gershom, throughout their families, out of the tribe of Issachar, and out of the tribe of Asher, and out of the tribe of Naphtali, and out of the tribe of Manasseh and Bashan, 13 cities. Unto the sons of Merari were given by lot, throughout their families, out of the tribe of Reuben, and out of the tribe of Gad, and out of the tribe of Zebulun, 12 cities. And the children of Israel gave to the Levites these cities with their suburbs. And they gave by lot out of the tribe of Judah, of the children of Judah, and out of the tribe of the children of Simeon, and out of the tribe of the children of Benjamin, these cities, which were called by their names. And the residue of the families of the sons of Kohath had cities of their coasts out of the tribe of Ephraim. And they gave unto them of the cities of refuge, Shechem and the Mount Ephraim with her suburbs. They gave also Gezer with her suburbs, and Jokmeam with her suburbs, and Beth-horon with her suburbs, and Ajalon with her suburbs, and Gath-rimmon with her suburbs. And out of the tribe of Manasseh, Aner with her suburbs, and Bileam with her suburbs, for the family of the remnant of the sons of Kohath. And so the sons of Gershom were given out of the family of the half-tribe of Manasseh, Golan and Bashan with her suburbs, and Ashtaroth with her suburbs. And out of the tribe of Issachar, Kadesh with her suburbs, Beberoth with her suburbs, and Ramoth with her suburbs, and Anam with her suburbs, and out of the tribe of Asher, Mishal with her suburbs, and Abdon with her suburbs, and Hukok with her suburbs, and Rahab with her suburbs. And out of the tribe of Naphtali, Kadesh and Galilee with her suburbs, and Hamon with her suburbs, and Kirjathaim with her suburbs. And so the rest of the children of Merari were given out of the tribe of Zebulun, Ramon with her suburbs, Tabor with her suburbs. And on the other side of Jordan by Jericho, on the east side of Jordan, were given them out of the tribe of Reuben, Bizar and the wilderness with her suburbs, and Jaza with her suburbs, Kedemoth also with her suburbs, and Mephah with her suburbs. And out of the tribe of Gad, Ramoth and Gilead with her suburbs, and Mahanaim with her suburbs, and Heshbon with her suburbs, and Jazer with her suburbs. I never want to see suburb again.
Well, I tell you, John did a pretty good job of those names, didn't he?
He did an excellent job.
I'll say. Boy, I tell you, you're elected.
You do a good job around here, you're stuck with it.
Well, let's see. We only have two more chapters of hard names, and then we get into chapter 9, and it gets easy. So who wants to volunteer for chapter 7,
Eight's going to be a kind of a toughie, but who wants to do seven? Going once? Going twice?
I'm with seven.
Okay. Let's see which one's the longest. Donnie's the man.
Let me see. Seven, that's a good number.
Yes, very.
The sons of Issachar, Tola, Pua, Jashub, and Zimran, four in all. The sons of Tola, Rephael, Uriel, Gibson, and Samuel hid their families during the reign of David. The descendants of Tola listed as fighting men in their genealogy number 22,600. The sons of Izzi, Israel, sons of Ahia, Michael, Adai, Joel, and Emma. All five of them were chiefs. According to their family genealogy, they had 36,000 men ready for battle, for they had many wives and children. The relatives who were fighting men belonged to all the clans of Issachar, as their genealogy were 87,000 in all. Three sons of Benjamin, Bela, Beker, and Jediel, sons of Bela, Esben, Uzzi, Uzziel, Jeremoth, and Ira, head families, five in all. Their genealogical record listed 22,034 fighting men. Sons of Beker, Zimriel, Jehoiada, Ezer, Mal, Amri, Jeremoth, Hijah, Anathoth, and Elimeth. All these were the sons of Beker. Their genealogical record listed the heads of families in 20,200 fighting men. The sons of Jedidiah, Bilhan, the sons of Bilhan, Jehush, Benjamin, Ehud, Ananath, the Sethan, Tarshish, and Ahishar. All these sons of Jedidiah were head families. There were 17,200 fighting men ready to go to war. The Shephites and Huphites were the descendants of Ir, and the Hushites the descendants of Aher. Naphtali, the sons of Naphtali, Jael, Guna, Abe, and Shilian, the descendants of Bilhah. Manasseh, the descendants of Manasseh, Ezrael and his descendants through his Aramean concubine. She gave birth to Machir, the father of Gilead. Machir took a wife from among the Huphites and Shephites. His sister's name was Makah. Another descendant whose name, Elophedad, who had only daughters. Maker's wife, Micah, gave birth to a son and named him Peresh. His brother was named Sheresh, and his sons were Ulam and Rakam. Eden. These were the sons of Gilead, son of Machir, the son of Manasseh. His sister, Amalek, gave birth to Ishod, Abiezer, and Mahala. The sons of Shemida were Ahan, Shechem, Liki, and Anayim, Ephraim. The descendants of Ephraim, Bilaseh, Bered his son, Tehath his Eliada his son, Tehath his son, Zabad his son, and Jephthah his son. Ezer and Eliad were killed by the native-born men of Gath when they were down to seize when they went down to seize their livestock. Father Ephraim mourned for them many days, and his relatives came to comfort him. Then he lay with his wife again, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. He named him Biraha, because there had been many misfortune in his family. His daughter was Shira, who built Lower and Upper Beth Horon, as well as Uzra Shira. Repheth was his son, Resheph was his son, Bela was his son, and Tahan his son. Aden his son, Ahud his son, Bishima his son, Nun his son, and Joshua his son. Their lands and settlements included Bethel and its surrounding villages, Aram to the east, Gezer and its villages to the west, and Shechem and its villages all the way to Ai and its villages. Along the borders of Manasseh were Beth Shan, Tanakh, Megiddo, and Dor, together with their villages. The descendants of Joseph, son of Israel, lived in these towns. Sons of Asher, Imnah, Ishvi, and Beri. Their sisters was Sarah. The sons of Beri, Heber, and Melchiel, who was the father of Bizrath. Eber was the son of Japhlet, Shomer, and Hotham, and of their sister Shua. The sons of Japhlet, Hash, Imha, and Ashbeth. These were Japhet's sons. The sons of Shomer, Ahai, Togah, Hubba, and Aram. The sons of his brother Helam, Ophath, Imna, Shelesh, and Amal. The sons of Jophath and Sophath. Shua, Harm, Shual, Beri, Bezod, Shama, Shilshah, Ephraim, and Bera. The sons of Jether, Jephunneh, Tispa, and Era. The sons of Ula, Ara, Aniel, and Rizia. All these were descendants of Asher, heads of families, choice men, brave warriors, and outstanding leaders. The number of men ready for battle is listed in their genealogy.
Very good.
You know, this seems hard. These names really seem hard, right? But imagine if this was written today, the way we name our kids today. Because about 80% of us have the same 10 names, right? It would read like the sons of John were Joe, Bob, Bill, and Steve. And the sons of Bob were John, Bob, Bill, and Steve. And the sons of Bill were John, Joe, Bill, and Steve. Yet, you know, it would be like the same names over and over again. At least they were more creative with names than we are now. Maybe it's because we rely on that last name to distinguish, you know, each other. But you know, how many guys I've met named Bill in my life? I don't want to be named Bill. It's like every third guy I ever met was named Bill, right?
Bill, how did they get so creative from Adam and Seth and Moses and then they get to all these names?
All the names had a meaning, right? That they weren't yet, you know, they did repeat names. We've seen the name Michael in chapters 5, 6, 7, and we'll see it in 8. In four different tribes, we'll see that name Michael, but it's still not. If we made this list today of the white families of Shreveport, how many marks would you see? You'd probably see a Mark and a Randy and a Don in every family, right? Yeah, you know, it would be, the names would be a lot more frequently used today, because that's what we only have, like a dozen names that are 80% of our men are named with a dozen or so names. And then there's a lot of lesser names that are used, right? But they're just not as
frequent. All these names meant something.
Yeah, all these names. Our names don't even really mean anything to us anymore. Well, John's a Bible name. Michael's a Bible name. Bob's a an old, you know, Saxon name, but everybody has it. It's like every two in every 10 people are named Bob, right? It seems like that anyway. Like we have a small number of names that are very common, and they really don't mean much to us anymore, even if they did mean something to us at one time. But these names all, you know, they were all words. They all definitely meant something.
Yeah, when Jacob named his sons, you know, that was, Reuben, behold the son, Simeon, Yahweh heard,
right.
Praise, and the names were the same as everyday conversation. If you were going to have the name, you know, if you were going to use the word praise, it was Judah, yeah, so... So those names, you know, Gad, behold the troop, or was that Gad?
Well, Isaac was named Isaac because his mother laughed, right? His mother laughed, so he was named Isaac.
Name's Isaac. And so many of the names have the E-L from the Elohim, or the A-H, you know, Jeremiah, Isaiah.
Yeah, that's Yahweh's name. Every one of them, right?
Yeah. And all of them have something to do, all those names have something to do with the sacred name or with at least the name.
Well, the names just sound odd to us today, but they all meant something specific, and they were all a lot more profound than the way we name our children today. I mean, even I, when I was young having kids, I named my son Edward John. It was just the name of her father and my uncle, right, or my grandfather. And so the kid's name was Edward John, but it doesn't really mean anything. Yeah, you know, I mean, Edward, what does Edward mean? I don't know what it means. What does John mean? Well, it's a Bible name, yeah, but I don't, yeah, you know, it has a meaning going back to Hebrew, but that name, that meaning is lost on us today. So they had a lot more care. They have all these weird names, but they had a lot more care then about how they named their children. And I'm sure nobody got picked on for their names, or at least not too often, because they all meant something.
Yeah, and that's one of the ways that they traced their lineage was because it was, you know, this name, the son of this name, instead of having surnames, you know, last names, you were identified by your family heritage by the number of, you know, you came from this one or this one or this one.
Right. Now, real quick, just a little historical note. I mean, I just did a program on this a few weeks ago. We just read in this chapter that the sons of Manasseh inhabited the city of Dor. And that's, you know, the Jewish version of the Bible basically denies the Bible, right? It's 400 years later, the people named the Dorians show up in Greece, and they came from Crete. They had to be those children of Manasseh that inhabited Dor. But the Jewish version of Scripture denies the historicity of Scripture. And there's little clues like that all through the Bible. But Dor was one of the cities we were just told that the children of Joseph were inhabiting.
Dorians, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's who they are.
Yeah.
And they're Israelites, no doubt. There's all sorts of historic proofs. But the Jewish version of the Bible and the Judeo-Christian version of the Bible, that they don't want to hear, you know, the meaning of these genealogies and the places they dwelt in and what that impacts, you know, how that impacts history, right?
It's interesting too to me that all of the times it talks about the number of the men who were eligible for warfare, and that's kind of the way that the community was viewed by how strong the community was by the number of men that were willing to take up a sword.
Right, and you have to multiply that by 4 or 5 to get the population. These were no mean populations. These were large numbers of people. This isn't any little desert strip with a couple of towns scattered here and there. These are large numbers of people.
Yeah. And the today, you know, we have still this a feeling for our immediate families,
where we would instantly take up arms to protect maybe a neighbor or maybe, you know, at least our wife and children. But we don't have the community of brotherhood amongst the race.
No.
That were willing to take up arms for, you know, I mean, you know, look what they did on Ruby Ridge. And, you know, it just, I mean, we just didn't.
We just sat there and listened.
We just sat there and let it happen, you know.
Everybody for three counties should have been there with their rifles.
Yeah. But we don't have that same community toward our racial stock brethren as we do toward our friends and our immediate family. Anyway, we don't feel that obligation any longer.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, our great-grandfather should have been marching on Washington with rifles and pitchforks, right? Well, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, they definitely should have been marching on Washington with rifles and pitchforks. That this apathy set in 100, 150 years ago. Our people were already totally apathetic to what their government was going to do to them.
Ron Paul's trying to change that apathy best he can. Boy, every time he comes up to ask that question about the military, he just big time. Well, that's because I think he knows the truth of 9/11, but he can't. I mean, it's hard to. I mean, he's got to kind of lie, but that's his only out. I mean, he can't come clean on the whole subject, but
he
can't
say more when he tries to explain what I mean. You know, he just, and it just makes it.
Well, he's in a bad position on that whole thing.
Well, it's like Iran, when they ask him about Iran, you know, and he tells them what he's saying is right, but. You know, it doesn't come across. Of course, they tear him up. The news media tears him up the moment he says anything.
Well, in the debate's what I'm talking about. Well, every time he asks him that in the debate, I watch it the other night, and he really just doesn't make any sense what he's trying to say. You know, I know what he's trying to say, but he's not even good enough to spin it.
Don't you think that's, you know, let's assume that Ron Paul knows the whole truth about the Jews. At least back, you know, maybe not from a two seed line perspective, of course, but at least he knows the whole truth about how evil the Jews are, how they've been infiltrated all of Western society in an attempt to subvert it and bring it down. Well, let's say he knows that, and he won't come out in a debate and just say it. Well, isn't that love for the world? I mean, what do you love first, the truth, or do you want to be a president that can't do anything or say anything anyway? Because if he gets elected, he's still not going to be able to do a damn thing. I hope he does get elected just so that people finally realize that we don't have a political solution. Because I'm sure if Ron Paul gets elected, well, maybe if he's not a shill, maybe it'll slow down the Jewish plans for the destruction of our nation for 4 years or for 8 years. But it's not going to go beyond that. They're going to get their shill in next time. That they're going to get one of their, you know, Obama or Bush monkeys in next time that'll do their bidding. And so if nothing passes for 4 years or 8 years, it's only slowed them down a little bit. And I'm sure that Ron Paul isn't going to get anything accomplished. The Congress and the lobbyists and the bankers, they're not going to let him get anything accomplished if he gets in. Even if he knew the whole truth and he wanted to accomplish it, he ain't going to get anything done.
I hope he don't get elected to run as Republican, because if he does, we'll have Obama again. Because he ain't going to.
Well, I don't think he would get a lot done, Bill. I just think he can wake up the apathy of the kinsmen, maybe.
Well, that'd be great, but I don't think that's going to happen either. I really don't. Most of them, you know, even if Ron Paul got elected one and started telling people what it was really about, that most of them wouldn't listen.
Now, I'm not saying he's going to fix Mystery Babylon, but at some point, isn't it going to be our kinsmen are going to learn to be a little bit more Jew-wise?
Well, we're promised an awakening, right? But I think that the economy has to crash first. I mean, that's my opinion. We're promised there's going to be an awakening, but it's not going to come without pain.
Well,
Well, guys, and I don't.
It's $17 trillion in debt. This economy is probably hanging on a thread.
Well, yeah, you know, it's hanging on a thread, but it's going to hang for as long as the bankers want it to hang.
Oh, they didn't make that paperwork work. We're going to make it.
Well, that's the only way they can steal from you.
Yeah.
When the dollar collapses and we go to bartering from each other again, I mean, you know, don't we all believe that the blessings of Yahweh, because of who we are, who our fathers are, and are upon us, and that when you take out the parasites out of the picture, that we're going to have more? I mean, is that not true? Are the bankers and the Jews up there getting rich because they're making it their own selves? They're taking it from us. And when
right.
that collapses,
and they're
unable to get it from us again, you think Father's going to turn his back on us? We're going to be okay. They're the ones that are going to be hurting. And we all sit right here in fear about the collapse of the economy and collapse of the monetary system, but when it all comes down where the rubber meets the road, we have got to, again, rely upon our God. You know,
I don't fear the collapse of the economy. When Babylon falls, it's our duty, because we see what's going on, because we've been gifted with that understanding of what's going on, to be the heralds that say, "Come out of her, my people." That's the way I see it. That's our turn when the economy collapses. That's our opportunity when the economy. That's the way I see it. It's not a it's doesn't put me in fear one bit. It actually gets me excited.
When the dollar falls, aren't they intending to come out with the global United Nations paper currency?
Well, that's only Alex Jones type speculation, right? I mean, there's really nothing.
I don't read Alex Jones, so I don't know him from a hole in the wall, but I mean, you know.
I think that comes from futurism.
Well, it's United Nations. That's not futurism. That's been here, done that.
I know it's a global. Futurism.
Well, right, but we already have a global currency. We already have.
The world has just come up with a different printing press, printing global money instead of a greenback.
But we already have, technically, we already have global money.
Well, that's why I say it's not that much of a stretch to, you know, come up with a European, American, North American, South, you know, whatever. But
the world order, the world government's already here. It's been here 100 years. We already have global money with the IMF. It's just not the, you know, we all in our various countries just spend some different paper, but we already have global money.
What I'm trying to say is the church is talking. What you just said in the Antichrist ties into that world government. You know, all my life I've heard that. I think that comes from futurism.
Well, I'm not saying a global government, but I think all the central international banks, you know, can all the feds around the world can.
They already do. That they're already all in bed with each other. They're already all in cahoots with each other in the IMF and the World Bank.
It happened in Europe with the euro. I mean, it's not that much of a stretch to say that, you know, we're going to take the euro to the next level and include America.
Well, they're hardly keeping the euro afloat, right?
Well, I know that.
Yeah, it's about to fall over there. Yeah, but that brother that's in charge of the euro, his brother's in charge of our money, and his brother's in charge of that. Them cats are all together.
Now, to me, what phony money we use really doesn't even matter. It's all phony. It's all artificial.
They're all together.
I see that.
Well, Babylon's got to fall, and when it falls, it's going to take the whole world monetary system with it. I think.
Like Randy said, it'll come a time where I feel, you know what I mean? My folks.
Well, when Babylon falls, to me, I see it as a time of opportunity. Yeah, you know, that's a time of opportunity. That's not a time of bomb.
Exactly.
But also, when your parents died, government didn't take it. You inherited their wealth. And that wealth was inherited by the next generation and the next generation. And it was built upon a community of family of real goods. If you take what Jonathan does for a living, and you realize that he produces X amount, Well, there's a lot of parasites out there ain't producing nothing. And they got their hand in Jonathan's pile. Now,
all right.
If Jonathan can control all of that, he's going to be doing better. And he may not understand how that's going to work, but it's got to, you know, once you get the parasites out of the picture, it will work.
Yeah, you see, when you had a big family, that increased your wealth. If I had
that's
more
right.
children, we
you
added
could, you
to
could
my
more
wealth.
Property.
And then when I got out of the picture, these boys, they came in, and all our people, like, your name means something. Like what we were talking about a while ago about your name.
And you didn't have to worry about Social Security to retire because your children out there, you know, they kept the business going, and you just moved on up in wherever you to the position where you, you know, were able to not have
a child. What was his business?
Take care of dad's business, right?
Okay, yeah. We discussed that in my house all the time.
Well, that's the way it should be today. Family should be a lot closer today. In fact, in a real world, none of us would be in usury debt. And sons would live in their parents' homes with their wives and kids. Just build a bigger house. And the parents raise the grandchildren while the children are out working. If you look back at your Hebrew Bible, that's the way it was, and that's the way it was years ago.
Hadn't been going damn long ago.
I'll tell you something else, too. When the patriarchs of the family, being the older generation, their minds and attitudes and understanding change, you know, as opposed to young people. Young people now raise children, they're not even fitting to raise them with the values that they have until they mid-age, you know, 50 years old. I mean, just look at how you view your grandkids as opposed to how you view your kids, and you will understand that you've got a lot better sense about what's really going on than you did when you were raising
them. Well, right. But what we have today is where we should have grandparents and children living right next to each other or right with each other, depending on the economic status of the family and how big the family estate was or family farm or whatever. They should be living together, and the grandparents should be raising the children as the parents are out working. And then the children would be worth a hell of a lot more having much wiser guidance as they grow up. That now the
right.
The Jew has the children moving out of the house, buying their own homes in mortgage debt, which keeps us in debt for the rest of our lives. When you take out that mortgage at 25, 28, 30 years old, yet you're in debt for the rest of your damn life. You're never going to crawl out from under that. You're going to be leveraging that to buy other things for the next 40, 50, 60 years. And then instead of your parents sitting your children and raising your children up, you're hiring strangers to do that. And usually it's kids or people that ain't got a lick of sense anyway. And that's the Jew has our whole society by the balls, because it has us trained to break our own families up at a young age when that's not the way the family unit should work. That the family unit should stay together and operate together and not become separate entities just for the sake of this Jew society. It's crazy.
That's why the Jew attacked the family life through the television and movies and everything else, and made that look bad, like Mayberry, you know, and they was all a bunch of idiots who wanted to live like that. And they took the kids away and put them in private public schools and everything else. Now they got pre-kindergarten schools for them to go to, so that the government gets control of them almost by the time they come out of the womb. And that's their plan, so that they can control their minds and do away with the family values and the family training that you're talking about.
It's going to be funny when all these environmentalists that claim they want us to walk and not using cars and government falls, they're going to have to be walking. And I'm going to see them walk, or I'll say, yeah, well, you tell the oil company and we could ride. How you like us walking?
Well, I think we as a people are going to be sadly shocked when the bottom does fall out and they lose all of the comforts of life and they have to go back to bare living, they're not going to know how to do it, most of them. And they're going to suffer. A lot of them are going to die, and it's going to be bad.
The truth is, them environmentalists, they don't want to ride, they want all us to walk.
Well, it can't work that way. So anyway, we've gotten way off the subject, but that's good. This been a good discussion. Very good.
Well, that's the worst thing that we've already all done was leave our parents when we were 20 to go get into debt for the rest of our lives, right?
How much different do you think Don Brown's grandchildren would view the world if they were sitting at his feet learning from their family patriarch about their heritage?
Rather, they'd be all screwed up. Nah, I'm kidding.
Dale Christian Church every Sunday morning. You know, if I could go back in time, my kids would never go in the church door. I run
right,
up in
exactly.
there every time the door got open when I was little. I mean, I'd run them up in there and make them listen to that. But how much different would it be if I had spent the same amount of time with them myself or had a family patriarch that understood way more than I did when I was 25 years old and having kids, having them do it?
It's impossible to do it. It's that age. That's what your mother and father was for. Then your grandfather
there you go.
Was there. And then as your kids got old, one of them passed away, you took that place, and then your kids come in, and all that knowledge was passed on one another. It takes a long time to get that.
Yeah.
But without these other older people in the family, it ain't going to get that. Because you have nothing to gauge it by, you know?
I think you'd have to get rid of your TV completely, too.
Oh, you got to get rid of TV. You got to get rid of the movies. You got to get rid of all these magazines, and you got to start from scratch.
They promote everything with the TV, and movies.
Well, this Jewish culture has totally destroyed our society, right? I mean, we 50-year-old women should be home with their grandchildren, and instead they're out at the malls, they're out at the clubs, they're out, they're trying to be 30 again. It's crazy. And they should be home raising their grandchildren and helping their daughter-in-laws or their daughters.
Yeah, but women have been liberated now. They're career women. They got, they got to get out there and take over the man's position and rule the world.
Yeah, well, that's the Communist Manifesto. It's right in there.
Hey, baby.
Yeah, Virginia Slims.
And it's our fault.
Yes, it's our fault, exactly. We've sat back and allowed it to happen. And we can't get control of it again. I mean, I think that's gone until the whole thing changes. Oh, we will, but I mean, we're not going to just jump out there now and do it. On our own, I'm saying.
We all let them cut the hair back in the 60s. Y'all did that.
Well, I didn't have any scissors.
It's your fault.
I wasn't big on hair anyway.
You can't prove that Gerald had hair in the 60s. Come on.
But,
we didn't see a picture to see if you ever had hair.
I have pictures I had, you know, and I had blonde, wavy hair, okay?
Did you have to do
it? Yeah, it was wavy, all right. It waved goodbye.
Oh. But mine fell out right after I went into college. It began to just fall out. And it wasn't college. It was that time. But I did have hair at one time.
College in the 60s?
Yeah. Early 60s. I graduated high school in 1960.
You listen.
Year I was born.
Oh no!
It was just rock.
No, we didn't know. We didn't know what a hippie was down here. We'd heard about them in California, but here in Louisiana, we didn't have hippies and all that sort of thing. When somebody came into town with California license plates, the police pulled them over and questioned them and gave them you know what. They had the devil, and that's the way it was.
They couldn't give a ticket because they couldn't spell it. They let
yeah.
them go to catch them back and wake
them. After Haight-Ashbury and all of that and Woodstock, then they began to start coming in. And
so when Peter Fonda rode his chopper in town, you ran him out?
Yeah, right. I would have. Yeah, easy ride.
My daddy had a reason for all that stuff. You ain't working enough. He kept your ass. I mean, my folks believe in work. And I found that one thing, the
the luckier I got, I noticed the harder I was working. The harder I worked, the luckier I got. And the more, you know, your stuff just stacks up quicker when you work hard. And my folks believe in that damn work. Now, I'm telling you, if you had time to muck your way with stuff,
yeah, but look what it did to you. It made you old.
But it also made your back pocket thick. Yeah. You know, your stuff got out. You didn't know nothing, you know. And they didn't believe in us. They didn't believe in that. They did not believe in it. They didn't even work their butts off. You want a car? I'll show you how to get one. How much it costs? $5. How much you make a dollar a year? You need to work 5 years. You know? You <get car. laughs> And that's the way they did. No exception.
Time you got your $5 saved up, it was 10.
He said he don't make no sense to pay for a car when you ain't got no house.
First car got cost $75. That pussy get cranked.
Yeah, but those 10 lesbians really did work.
But they held up pretty good.
Y'all ready to hit the next chapter?
Sure. You want me to jump in there, Randy?
Either way.
All right. Go ahead. All right. Now Benjamin begat Bela, his firstborn, Ashbel the second, and Ahara the third, Hoah the fourth, and Rapha the fifth. And the sons of Bela were Adar, and Gera, and Abihud, and Abishua, Ammon, and Ahoah. Gera, and Shaphuthan, and Zuran. And these are the sons of Ehud. These are the heads of the fathers of the inhabitants of Geba, and they removed them to Manahath. And Naaman and Ahiah and Gera, he removed them and begat Uzzah and Ahihud. And Shahuram begat children in the country of Moab, and he had sent them away. Husham and Bara were his wives. He begat Hodesh, his wife, Jobab, and Zibiah, and Mesha, and Malcolm. Diaz and Sakia, and Mirma, these were his sons, heads of the fathers. Husham, he begat Abitab and Elpal, the sons of Elpal, Eber, and Mesham, and Shamed, who built Ono, and Lod, towns thereof. Beriah also, and Shema, who were heads of the fathers of the inhabitants of Ajalon, who drove away the inhabitants of Gath. And Ahotheo, Shashak, and Jeremoth, and Zebediah, and Arad, and Ader, and Michael, and Ishpah, and Johah, the sons of Uriah, and Zebediah, and Mishalem, and Hezekiah, and Heber. Ishmerai also, Jezali, and Jobab, the sons of Elpal, and Jachim, and Zikri, and Zabdi, and Elani, and Zelthai, and Elal, Adiah, Ariah, Shemrath, the sons of Shimhi, and Ishpan, and Heber, and Elil, and Abdon, and Zekri, and Hanan, and Naya, and Eliam, and Ashtoth, Seja, and Ephidiah, and Shul, the sons of Sheshak, and Shemshirai, Beriah and Athaliah, and Jer and Elil, Ikri, the sons of Jeroham. These were the heads of the fathers by their generation. Chief men, they dwelt in Jerusalem. And at Gibeon dwelt the father of Gibeon. His wife's name was Maacah. His firstborn son, Abdon, and Zur, and Kish, and Baal, and Nadab. And Gedor, and Ahio, and Zachar, and Mikloth begat Shem, Shemiah, and these also dwelt with their brethren in Jerusalem over against them. And Ner begat Kish, and Kish begat Saul, and Saul begat Jonathan.
This is something.
And Melchishua, and Abinadab, and Eshbaal. Son Jonathan was Merabal, and Merabal begat Micah. And the sons of Micah were Pithon, and Melech, and Tereah, and Ahaz. And Ahaz begat Ova, Jehoda, and Jehoda begat Almeth, and Asmaveth, Zimri, and Zimri begat Moza. And Moza begat Benia, and Rapha was his son. Elisa, his son, and Azel, his son. Azel had six sons, his names are these: Azrekam, Bokeru, and Ishmael, and Shariah, and Obadiah, and Hanan. All these were the sons of Azel. Don and the sons of Eshek, his brother, were Ulam, his firstborn, Jehush, the second, and Eliphelet, the third. And the sons of Ulam were mighty men of valor, archers, and had many sons. And sons had many sons, and sons, 150. All these are the sons of Benjamin.
Now you see, Jonathan, and this is Saul and Jonathan, right? The king Saul and his son Jonathan. That and Saul's genealogy is mentioned again in 1 Chronicles 9. But you see, John, that's the first one that I've noticed in Chronicles. I mean, I could be wrong, that uses that Baal as part of their name, right? It is Jonathan's son Merib Baal. I didn't notice that. In the genealogies earlier, did any of them had used that? I mean, Baal is a Hebrew word that means Lord, and that's where the name for the Canaanite deity came from. But Baal was actually a whole collection of different Canaanite deities, depending on where you were at the time. They were all different Baals. But that's the first time I notice it here. And Jonathan's usually, seen as being a pious individual. I don't think this is the name of a deity. It means Baal is my advocate, though. But, and it might be an early example of the title Baal for Lord. Because Baal does mean a lord or a master, right? So I thought that was interesting to see that here. I forgot it was here, actually.
Wasn't Jonathan's son the one that David had sought out to find if there was anybody left of the house of Saul? Wasn't his name Mephibosheth?
According to this, it's Merib-Baal is another name for Mephibosheth. But I don't know why Jonathan can't have two sons, but I would have to research it further. I don't know if the dictionary is connecting them, but I don't know if they're actually connected in the text, right? Merib-Baal is mentioned again in 1 Chronicles 9, but there's no mention of Mephibosheth. That's a tongue twister. Yeah, you said it a lot better than I'm saying it. Mephibosheth.
I want to remember that maybe that was the last of the descendants that David could find still alive, which, like you say, it didn't necessarily mean just because this other one had a son didn't mean he didn't have it before, before Saul's house was wiped out.
Well, let me see here. Let me look up. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. That's Jonathan.
He was dropped.
And nurse took him up and fled, and it came to pass she made no haste to flee, that he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Well, he's mentioned many times, but he's not. I don't see it, and there's no association with directly in a text, because Merib-Baal only appears in Chronicles. The name yet, you know, Mary Bell only appeared, as we see it here, only appears in Chronicles, and Mephibosheth only appears in 2 Samuel, so that's strange. So maybe it is it's a scribal error. That can't be a scribal error because the names are no way similar to each other except for the M. That's pretty well. I don't know if it could be looked into, but I don't think it could be resolved, right?
May not.
And maybe that's why the dictionary just assumes that Mary Bal is just another name for Mephibosheth. Actually, this is weird, right? Because Mary Bal means my advocate is Bal, right? But Mephibosheth means exterminating the idol. So maybe it's remotely possible that Jonathan did name his son Meribaal after some idol, and later his name was changed to Mephibosheth, exterminating, putting away the idolatry. Maybe that's a possibility. That's I have no other explanation, right?
Well, it seems almost out of character for Jonathan, although we don't really know because.
Well, we could all be stupid when we're young, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But he definitely, is on the right.
Yeah, he was portrayed as being a pious, decent fellow.
Yeah.
Better man than his father, that's for sure.
Well, his father was actually a pretty good guy too. He was one of the best, but he.
Well, right, and he got he was corrupted. I believe he the children of Israel wanted a king, and Yahweh gave him what looked like the noblest guy in the whole land, and I think there's more to it. As far as Benjamin being a light before Judah, the first king was from Benjamin, right?
Right.
And that was for Yahweh's example also. But yes, they picked the noblest man of the sons of Benjamin, apparently, by his stature and his handsomeness, but he turned out to be just what Yahweh promised. A real prick and a thorn in the side of the people. No doubt. That he didn't that it didn't work out for their detriment because he came corrupt.
Did people choose Saul, or was that Samuel went and sought him out of anointing? Wasn't that of others?
Well, no. Yahweh chose Saul, but he chose a man of noble, fine stature, right? He seemed to be described as a man that the people would look upon and see as a king like, right? But no, Yahweh chose him. I think he chose him for that reason.
I do too. I believe that he was a very noble man, very powerful, very strong, and all of the best qualities of human. That way, when he did fail, he realized that it wasn't about the best qualities of human nature.
Well, right, but that's how we tend to pick our leaders, right?
Right.
And they're not always the smartest or the most skilled leaders, right? Good looks and physical prowess don't always add up to good leadership skills and wisdom.
It's also interesting that to me of the character of these people, how brave they were, and how if you read the accounts of Jonathan coming against the Philistines, yeah. He just basically said, if Yahweh gives us a sign, they tell us to come up here, we go up there and kill him. And here we go, And his armor bearer right there with him, it's kind of, we've lost that. We've lost that if we're right, it's worth dying for a thing,
Well, now, a lot of people during the war of northern aggression had that philosophy.
the southern armies had that philosophy.
Well, the Jews have bred that out of us too. I think that the Jews have trained it out of us with this education system, and
it was a noble cause, in other words, and you know they rallied.
Well, I think that came down to that core group I was talking about. You know, when it's your family and your property, and then you're willing to go a little further than you are if it's, you know, if just some guys up there in Tennessee, you know. But I think they had a better sense of it then, you know, than we do now. We tend to, you know, nothing seems to be worth it to us any longer.
Well, if I got in trouble here, I don't think anybody on any of the other streets would come to my aid, and probably most of the people on this street wouldn't come to my aid. So, you know,
but you're saying we could rob you right here tonight and nobody have to worry about nobody can get on the getaway.
All right.
All right, chapter 9. So all Israel were reckoned by genealogy, and behold, they were written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah, who were carried away to Babylon for their transgression. Now the first inhabitants dwelled in their possession in their cities were the Israelites, the priests, Levites, and the Nethinims. And Jerusalem dwelt in the children of Judah. Jerusalem dwelt of the children of Judah, and of the children of Benjamin, and of the children of Ephraim and Manasseh. Uthiah, the son of Amihud, the son of Omri, the son of Imri, the son of Manai, the children of Phares, the son of Judah, and of the Shalonites, Haziah, the firstborn, and his sons, and the sons of Zerah, Jeuel, and their brethren, 690, and the sons of Benjamin, Shelu, the son of Meshelem, the son of Hadoviah, the son of Hashianuah, Abaniah, the son of Jeroham, and Eli, the son of Uzziah, the son of Micah, and Meshulam, the son of Zephathiam, the son of Reuel, the son of Abani, and their brethren, according to the generations 956. And these men were chief of the fathers in the house of their fathers. And the priests Jedidiah and Jehoiarib and Joshin. And Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Meshanim, the son of Zadok, the son of Marioth, the son of Ahitub, the ruler of the house of God. Adaiah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Pashur, the son of Melchiah, Asiah, son of Adiel, the son of Jazerah, the son of Meshim, the son of Mishilemeth, the son of Imer, and their brethren, heads of the house of their fathers, 1,703, very able men for the work of the service of the house of God. And the Levites, Shemaiah, the son of Hashub, the son of Azricam, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Merari, Bakbakhar, Eshheresh, Gala, Paniah, the son of Micah, the son of Zikra, the son of Asaph, and Obadiah, the son of Shemaniah, the son of Gala, the son of Jeduthun, and Barakiah, the son of Asaph, the son of Elkiah, who dwelt in the villages of the Nephophites. And the porters were Shalem, Akub, and Talmon, Heman, and their brethren, Shalma, who was chief, and Hirtuah waited in the king's gate eastward, and they were porters in the companies of the children of Levi. And Shalman, the son of Kori, the son of Abiasaph, the son of Korah, and his brethren of the house of his father, the Korthites, were over the work of the service, keepers of the gates of the tabernacle, and their fathers being over the host of Yahweh were keepers of the entry. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, was the ruler over them, and time passed, and Yahweh was with him. And Zechariah, the son of Meshelaniah, was a porter of the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And these were chosen to be porters in the gate of 212. These were reckoned by their genealogy in the villages whom David and Samuel the seer did ordain in their set office. So they and their children had the oversight of the gates of the house of Yahweh, namely the house of the tabernacle, by wards.
So this is still taking all these genealogies over a period of like 500 years and present. Yeah, you know, it's a long period. We go from Levi and now we're down to David, and that's 500 years later. Between the Exodus and the time of David is 500 years. And it's glossing over a lot of history because it started this chapter out saying that these Benjaminites and they dwelt in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was on the border between Benjamin and Judah. And you know, they didn't dwell in Jerusalem until David took it from the Jebusites. So they never really dwelt there for 500 years, right? So this is these compilations are very very uneven as far as completion is concerned.
Yeah. All right, 24. And four quarters were the porters toward the east, west, north, and south, and their brethren, which were in their villages, were to come after 7 days from time to time with them. And these Levites, the four chief porters, were in their set office, and were over the chambers and treasuries of the house of God. And they lodged around about the house of God, because the charge was upon them, and the opening thereof every morning pertained to them. And certain of them had the charge of the ministering vessels, which they should bring them in and out by tally. Some of them were also appointed to oversee the vessels, and all the instruments of the sanctuary, and the fine flour, and the wine, and the oil, and the frankincense, and the spices. And some of the sons of the priest made the ointment of the spices. And Medihiah, one of the Levites, who was the firstborn of Shalem, the Korahite, had the set office over the things that were made in the pans. And other of the brethren of the sons of the Korahites were over the showbread to prepare it every Sabbath. And these are the singers, chief of the fathers of the Levites, who were remaining in the chambers were three, for they were employed in that work day and night. These chief fathers of the Levites were chief throughout the generations, their generations, that these dwelt in Jerusalem. And Gibeon dwelt the father of Gibeon, Jehiel, whose wife's name was Malchah. And his firstborn was Abdon, then Zur, and Cush, and Kish, and Baal, and Ner, and Nadab, and Gedor, and Ahio, and Zechariah, and Milkloth. And Milkloth begat Shimeon, and they also dwelt with a brother in Jerusalem over against their brethren, and Ner begat Kirsch, and Kirsch begat Saul, and Saul begat Jonathan, and Milkasha, and Abinadab, and Eshbal. And the son of Jonathan was Meribbaal, and Meribbaal begat Michael. And the sons of Michael were Pithon, and Melech, Tariah, and Ahaz. And Ahaz begat Jarah, and Jarah begat Alameth, and Asmaveth, Zimri, and Zimri begat Mozah. And Mozah begat Baniah, and Rephaiah, his son, Eliashiah, his son, Azel, his son, and Azel had six sons, whose names were these: Azricam, Bakaru, Ishmael, and Shariah, and Obadiah, and Hanan, and these were the sons of Azel.
So according to this, Saul had a grandfather named Baal. That's I find it odd. That's also awfully forward, right? Right. I mean, that'd be like you naming your son Lord, right?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have a problem writing it in the 5th century B.C. They wrote it, but it's there, right? But it does seem pretty wild. It seems pretty Yeah, you know, it seems to me almost to be bordering on impious already, right? To name your son Lord, that you're promoting him over all of his kin, over all his brethren. In my purview, yeah, that's the way I would look at it.
This Mary Bell, this my Bible refers you back to 2 Samuel 4:4. And this grandson of Saul.
Yeah, well, they in 2 Samuel they're saying the dictionary here I have that is Mary Bell is the same as Mephibosheth. That's what Randy and I were talking about. You know, when he was mentioned in chapter 8.
Opponent of Baal is what this says.
Opponent of Baal?
Yeah, opponent, well, the name was originally Mary Bell, apparently meaning opponent of Baal.
Okay, my dictionary oddly says that Mary Bell means, and this is the Strong's Enhanced Lexicon, right? Bell is my advocate. I'm going to check now. I just pulled out the original Strong's Lexicon just for the hell of it, right? And I'm going to look it up there. I mean, I'm sure they would rather have it say opponent of Bell. Here it means, yeah, you're right. In the original Strong's Concordance, it says rebellion of Baal. And Strong's has I.E. against in parentheses. Now, Mary is related to that same word Mary, which means bitter or bitterness. And it is a idiom for rebellion, right? And it's used very often in that sense. To be bitter is to be rebelling against. That was a Hebrew idiom that's actually very common in the Bible. So yeah, your dictionary is right. This Strong's Enhanced Lexicon that comes with Bible Works is that this is 2 weeks in a row. I've seen very poor definitions in it. Baal is my advocate is what they have here. And I don't know if that can be looking at the similar Hebrew words. I don't know how they arrived at that. I really don't.
And so this guy here falls verse 4, huh? Or he fell and became crippled.
Earth fell on him or something, huh?
Yeah. His nurse picked him up and fled, but as she heard him leave, he fell and became crippled. Oh, okay. I guess he had an accident of some sort.
The Bible's never long on words, right? It must have been some fall if it crippled him for life, right?
Yeah.
The Bible is always very terse. He fell and became crippled, and that's all you need to know.
Yeah. Kind of like though Israel, when he crossed the book Jabbok, he became lame.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, Mephibosheth may have broke his leg in four places, right? Back then they couldn't set bones as well as we do today, and that would cripple a man.
Where are we?
Well, that's the ideal, you know, with these genealogies would be to take this Yeah, you know, if somebody ever had the time, I don't know, maybe it's been done in a book somewhere to take these genealogies and chronicles and actually, you know, put them side by side with Kings and Samuel and Judges and Numbers and see how they show up. But I think that these Chronicles was compiled from records in the 5th century BC, and that's very clear right from the genealogies themselves, right? And the genealogies here in these first 10 chapters are not a very complete history of the tribes. It's just a sketch. It's pretty clear to me that it's just a sketch of the genealogies in order to tell us something of this ancient kingdom, but it's not very historically minded because what we see great jumps in centuries here. Without any given historical references to associate those centuries those generations with any particular time. Yeah, you know, I mean, it starts with the Exodus and it goes down to David's time and there's nothing, yet, you know, nothing but lists of names in between.
Kind of focus on office holders and military too.
Right. Well, right, but there aren't too many events that we could actually pin a generation down to a particular time as we know the events today, right, or as we perceive the events from Judges and that book of Judges, that's a really sketchy period in biblical history, in Israelite history, it really is.
One of the things about the genealogy, so he's just trying to beat it in our heads how important it is to stay pure, you know, to be able to trace all these lineages back. I mean, you start the New Testament immediately, but you go to the genealogies to show the lineage.
Well, it was extremely important to our ancestors, or they wouldn't have kept them, right?
Right.
So it must have, yeah, you know, it must have had great import, and that should be a lesson for us today that. It's still important that we marry somebody of our own race and be able to show that.
No, we recognize when we step into this dog breeding stuff and the horse breeding and all, we recognize how important genealogy plays in the characteristics of the offsprings. You know, racehorse breeders do it. I mean, they've got books and books and books of how to blend the characteristics to make what they're looking for. And yet we, our children choose their mate so, you know, overlooked a lot of times, you know. But
all these guys, their daddy chose their mate.
They don't hardly look at what granddad and dad did when they married their husband, you know, of the family and the lineage that the family is and how noble that is and how honorable it is.
All these guys had something to do with their children's wife. They went out and made dang sure. They looked them up themselves. You know, they presented
them
to the wife. That way, and you know, there wasn't nobody in the grandma. You know, they just, of course, if you went and got your daughter, you know you're going to go find, you know, the best dude you find, you know.
I have no idea what gets into a man to make him marry outside of his race. I even when I was 15, 16 years old, there is no way I could ever conceive of having some kind of nappy-headed squat monster for a son.
Disgusting, isn't it?
I just don't get it. It's a total disconnect with reality. What would make a man want to do that?
I feel like I said before, the lines have blurred now. I mean, you know, they look white, but, you know, something is not quite all there. And with you not knowing the whole family tree of that person, I mean, it's really hard these days.
Well, right. But, Mark, you pick a woman that kind of looks like you. You know, I mean, yeah, you could look at Sharon and see that she's, Yeah, you know, a white woman and she's married material.
I mean,
but you look at somebody that's half black or half Puerto Rican or Mexican. How could you think about having children with that? That's just crazy.
No, but I'm saying, you know, everybody here I know knows people like this. I had a guy that worked for me, you know, not quite red hair, but close to it. You know, pale skin, white, but yet his mother. And his mother's sister, so this guy's aunt, you know, I met both of them, and they were short, Indian-looking, you know, Mexican-Indian kind of looking people. Yet it didn't come through his genealogy, so, I mean, his bloodline. He took after his dad somehow, but yet it was in his blood.
Right. Well, that's why we have to get to know each other before we pick spouses, right?
Well, yeah.
That's why if my in a perfect world... If my son brought a woman home or my daughter brought a guy home, I'd want to meet his family, right? Before they went any further. Before I put my stamp of approval on anything.
But, you know, sometimes that stuff, it skips a generation. You know, like Mitt Romney has been in the news lately. His father and his grandfather went to Mexico because polygamy was having problems in the U.S. And if you look at Mitt Romney's sons, they don't always show them on the news, but they do. They are dark-skinned, dark-haired, almost Mexican-looking kids. And it's like, you know, like, so Mitt Romney's dad or grandfather had to have some Mexican mixture in there. And it's like it skipped a generation because Mitt Romney doesn't look Mexican. But look, as kids, you can tell something's wrong there.
I think it's hard.
There's always exceptions where it is hard, but you try to do the right thing. You try to meet the person's family, and if you see red flags, you stay away, and you should have the sense to do that.
That's why.
I mean, it's too late for most of us, but that's how we should teach our children.
That's why I'm checking real hard to trace Shanika and get all of her background before we. Get serious, you know.
That's important.
Well, that's why the managers weren't allowed to be amongst the congregation because they started becoming more acceptable looking, you know.
Well, today we're learning the lessons the hard way, aren't we? And that's why only Christ can separate the wheat from the tares, right?
Yeah.
How many Jews got into this country at the end of the 1900s, at the end of the 1800s?
He's trying to find suitable mates for his daughters, and, you know, if you can't even tell by looking, you've got to, like I say, get to know them.
Well, right, you have to get to know them, and if they look apparently white and their families are apparently white, then you have to look at their fruits.
You know, it's hard to do that. It's hard to tell. But what's even more disturbing is the fact of how many of our brethren don't care anymore, or at least have been duped into the idea that since the universalist is true, that since I was once eternally lost and now I become saved, then anyone who repeats the sacraments that I did to become saved can become saved also, and they can become a true child of Abraham just simply by doing this, this, and this. You know, and it's getting to be so prevalent and obvious that they don't care anymore. It's in the office where I work, there's six or seven offices in the engineering department. I know of one guy in there who I believe his family is probably all pure. The other ones either have a son or a daughter that's involved in some kind of mix. One of them his son is married to an Oriental girl. One of them is one of them's married to a Cajun down there. And when you go to talking all this kind of stuff, and you all of a sudden you look around and you realize you just stepped on everybody's toes.
Yeah.
But it happens pretty often.
Daily.
Yeah.
You get out, and that's why when you start talking to him, you don't know anything about it. Well, but when he turns around and carries his butt,
yeah.
You know, you don't step on.
Doesn't mess up. Yeah.
That's written a lot of identity people that changed into this year. The others regretted being wrong with lead, my friend.
Yeah. So they got some in Woodmile. Yeah, so now they're trying to make it right.
Trying to make it right, so they just put them in Romans chapter 11. and the Israelites were a little bit better than others. Don't work either, you know, but that's what they do. And a lot of these Israelites that know a lot about quite lately, Keith Hunt, knows a lot about the Israelites, but he believes in the universal of all. I think you're arguing, you know, I got him in a bind, but anyway. Susan Brown on that universalism.
Well, you know, there's no guarantee of success, but you choose a mate that you believe is apparently white, that's a sincere and good person, and chances are you won't go wrong.
Yeah.
And that's the best that you could do, is to strive to stick with your own race and with people that are apparently good people. None of us have a guarantee of purity. I mean, we all can be pretty sure in our hearts of who we are because of our innate spirits, but none of us have that 100% guarantee, and that's part of the punishment of our people. Part of the punishment of our people, we sinned knowing we were children of God, meaning our grandfathers, and they still screwed up. Knowing they had that guarantee of the covenants, they still screwed up. And now we have to seek God without that guarantee. That's part of our punishment. That's the way it is. But we try to do the right thing. And when we strive to do the right thing and we're consistent about it, and we believe what we're doing is the right thing, and we accept his word, and we understand what the obedience is that he seeks, then we have... Yeah, you know, all the insurance that we could have in this world, all the assurance that we could have, we can't have any more greater insurance than that. If you love me, keep my commandments.
Well, it says that Yahweh's Spirit testifies with our spirit that we are the children of God. You know?
Right.
And that's really, like you say, and even if I find out, though, that there's something wrong in my blood lineage, it doesn't change the truth just because it becomes me.
And I've been confronted with that exact same thing, and that was my exact same answer. Many times I've had people say to me, well, what if you're a bastard? And my response to them would be, well, how does that change the truth? Just because it affects me means it's not true anymore?
Yeah.
You know, if the sun's up and the light shines, just because I don't like the light doesn't mean that I can deny that the sun's up.
If you discovered, though, that there was something wrong in your lineage, how would that affect you and your beliefs and everything?
Well, nevertheless, you know, if I discovered something wrong in my lineage, I would, you know, I would believe that I was not part of the promise any longer. But nevertheless, it wouldn't change.
It's time to eat and drink, because tomorrow you're going to die.
Yeah. But nevertheless, if you view that Yahweh is faithful to the circumstances and principles that he sets out, my life, at least as long as I live, can still be enhanced by being
by
obedient
knowledge.
To by knowledge of law, in my view anyway, even though that I may not be,
you're exactly right.
You know, still nevertheless, there are certain principles that apply. If I don't commit adultery, I'm not going to have a disease.
They'll just say one day you don't wake up.
Yeah, if I don't steal from my neighbors and do the things to my neighbors, it's still going to be a good thing. It just means that when I'm gone, I'm gone. But I can still, you know.
But you're not going to burn in any fire. All that.
Well,
no. That's what scares all these other people about that thing.
But if it's not true, then what are we doing here? You know, if we don't believe what it says, then it doesn't matter. You know, we're wasting our time.
Well, the way you're thinking is the way a son thinks, and it's not the way a bastard thinks. If you were a bastard, you would have a totally different way of thinking.
You'd be wanting to what the son has. You'd be wanting, you know, and that's what the problem is. That's why we are flooded here in this country, is because they want what the son has.
Well, the children of the flesh always persecute the children of the spirit. I mean, that's a biblical lesson, right?
Right.
Galatians chapter 4.
And you know, and there's no sense if you're a child of spirit and dealing in certain ways with the children of the flesh. I mean, It's okay that they don't know it. It's okay. You know, they don't have to know it. I don't have to convince the children of the flesh that covenants are only Israel. It doesn't make any difference that they don't know.
No.
You know?
No, the preaching of the gospel is folly to those who are going to die. It's silly trying to teach them the truth.
And that's, you know, that there's a black preacher that works out there, and there's guys that always try to put me at odds with him. And, you know, I don't deal with that. I mean, what's the purpose? You know, that's just...
You can't convince your dog it's a dog. That your dog belongs at the table. The only thing that keeps your dog off the table is the threat of force and his fear of you. You can't convince your dog that he's a dog. It's not possible.
I mean, why would you want to? I mean, it doesn't matter that he don't know it, you know?
Eli likes
right.
to mingle with black preachers.
Yeah. He loves to. Oh, he's been on a campaign against me. He's done about 7 programs about me the last 6 weeks, I swear.
Yeah, but you remember when he did that show with those black preachers?
Right.
That was comical.
Well, and that shows what his spirit is.
Well,
that shows.
I can't see the reasoning of even going through that, because there's no way they are going to be saved.
Well, that's why Paul said the preaching of the gospel is foolish to those who are going to die. It's
a lot of people, and you can't tell them that they're not of the promise, because they're not going to understand it.
They're never going to believe
you. They're not going to understand it. Pointless. And so you're spinning your wheels, and besides, it's not for them, and you're not supposed to take it to them. Bottom line.
I can't understand all these people with atheists and Odinism is wanting to save the white race, but they don't know why. You know, and I've been arguing with atheists, and one of them went on a nigger program. I've been on one Eli was on. I'm not sure. I listened to some of it, and then they just eat him alive. Of course, he wasn't talking about religion. You know, he was talking about saving the white race, and these other people that were trying to hit him out and call in, you know, well, the niggers, put your niggers on the line. They would let the white fella on the line, and I'm thinking,
I think there's something
they're going to have another program. You know, it's a slight race deal on Facebook.
I don't trust
people.
People hear it, they get hurt.
Form, because I guess they read I was white or something. And so, anyway, I thought, what in the world are you going on about war? And first off, you don't know
why
he should be saved. So what is your point? And Odinism believes it doesn't matter, really, themselves. You know, and they believe in the white race, the Europeans and the white race. It's kind of funny.
Well, they're looking at it from strictly a racial standpoint. The white race is the only one that's ever developed or done or created civilization. So, you know, it's good to be white. But they don't know the biblical end of it and don't want to know.
And Odinism has got all kind of problems. They think it's a bunch of gods. Jesus didn't die. Arguing with him for 2 months.
It's a cartoon religion, right?
Huh?
It's a cartoon religion.
Yeah, it's right. That's about what it is. There ain't nothing to it. It's nothing really biblical. They don't believe the Bible at all. They yet try to use the Bible against you, just like the atheist does. In fact, when you use the Bible to prove your point, then they don't believe it. But then when they want to take something out of context to prove their point, well, then they believe it.
Yep. Well, I've debated Odinists time and time again, and I've outlined the history, and they haven't been able to refute me, but that they still don't believe it because they don't want to believe that there's a controlling moral authority. That's what bothers them more than anything about Christianity. They're, most of them are libertarian-minded and refuse to believe that their morals should be regulated. And they don't understand the importance of why their morals should be regulated.
Then you got the creativity movement, which was started by a Jew.
Well, yeah, they're just clowns. The creators are just straight clowns. They believe in evolution. They think that we created ourselves.
sons got your same name, that's the way you continue on after life. You just die, son takes on your name. Kind of like,
well, right, they reject everything spiritual. That they reject the idea we could survive after our bodies die.
All kind of stuff, but I've learned most people in Europe don't know nothing about anything.
I'm making a prediction right now. All this electronic gadgets, y'all want to get rid of that stuff.
I deleted just about everybody in Europe because I found out over there the modernism is big and the atheists and the creativity is the main thing they believe in. And the mass star people I have seen.
He'll be able to run through everybody on the internet, and he's gonna come to a page and says, "This is the end of the internet."
Well, Bill, we had a good study tonight. We appreciate you sitting in and being with us, and we look forward to next week. And we have a good big group tonight. I'm hoping that we have a reef. Of course, Jonathan won't be here next week. He'll be out in the with the fishies, but. Maybe everybody else can be here next week and we can have a good group. I thank everybody for coming. And Bill, if we can get, I'm still have an issue with TalkShoe. It's not working, but we think we may have a solution. We're going to try it and see.
Well, you know, you can listen to the live audio right off the stream on my website, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll work any better for you, but.
Well, it'll work. Yeah, it'll work on all your problems. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be on tomorrow. I'm going to redo James 3 tomorrow, just because I it's hard to get a whole program out of just James 4 and 5, right? It really is. That there isn't a whole lot of material there, but there's a point I want to make again in James 3, and I want to make it more concisely than I made it last week. And you know exactly what James is talking about when he's talking about the tongue. Yeah, you know. Setting the world on fire. Well, he's talking only about the teaching of false doctrines, right? And that's the context if you read all of James 3. I'll be pointing that out tomorrow night. I got a few other things to talk about, too.
Well,
I'm going
to
talk.
Listen, Janet will probably want to listen in tomorrow night to the program.
Great.
If we can. And
Well, they're all on podcasts. I mean, every one of them.
But they're all on Christogenia, right?
Every one of them.
Okay, well, we'll try to tune in tomorrow night, and Janet will listen in, too. You don't have a chat on there, and there's no way to talk, right? It's just a listening in.
Well, right. It's for, I got it that way for people that have a hard time with the TalkShoe audio, right?
I understand. Okay. Well, we'll try to listen in, and again,
There's three players on the upper left-hand corner of my website. It's the top player, right?
Mark mailed your CD. It went off today on MindCom, so you'll be getting it in 2 or 3 days.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to have any time for it for about 2 weeks. Okay.
Let me know what you think.
My wife's got a cell phone, and she's got
a phone. Yeah, that'd be great to have MindConf in a single audio. I'll put that whole thing on my website if I can. I don't think it's copyrighted.
I think it's the full book. I don't think it's divided in the first part.
Yeah, she deals with it, so I guess.
Yeah, the audio I have on there is just the first part.
Right.
She just kind of looks around.
Okay, well, thank all the people on TeamSpeak that still stuck with us. And
well, they're hearing you. There's a few people there. There's about a dozen people there. They're hearing you.
Okay, well.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. I'll see you next week. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night, girl.